What is it like to be refereed by Nigel Owens? How is life at Munster now without Anthony Foley? Who is the key man in Wales' starting 15? And what the hell happened between England and Italy? It's all coming up on The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
With fantastic support, half of Ireland were here. The rest of them are hopefully smiling at home.
We had a bet earlier in the year, €20, that if we won it, I wouldn't cry, but it's the best £20 I'll ever spend.
Here's Heaslip. Well, he picks it up quickly and off he goes. Drops it off to Hinshaw. Robbie Hinshaw scores it. Rugby history. Ireland beat the All Blacks for the first time.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of The Hard Yards, the Sports Show Rugby podcast. I'm Andy McGeady. With me in studio today are Sports Show Rugby reporter Pat McCarry and former Ulster and Ireland back Paddy Wallace. Imagine it, a back weeks of podcasts and Paddy, you're the first back. You're most welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And on the line we have two more ex-Ireland internationals in Gerry Flannery. Hello Gerry.
How are you doing, lads?
And Victor Costello. Hello Victor.
Hi guys.
We'll have Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes in later to talk about the spreads for next week's crucial Six Nations weekend and to tell us how the Pro 12 Championship is stacking up. But first, a nice little moment that weekend with Nigel Owens and the ball boy. Yellow card and classic Nigel.
Yeah, it was. No, he's a bit of a character now. He's quite the celebrity now, and he kind of feeds off that. So any opportunity he has to, you know, develop his brand, I think he jumps at it. But it adds a bit of humour to the game, and it's appreciated by the players as well, and the supporters, obviously.
What is it like when you're reffing with a guy like that who seems to have a bit of an irreverence to him? I mean, is that a good thing when you're a player?
I always enjoyed being refereed by Nigel because he sort of... he did things his own way. You know, you could be stuck in Pro 12 matches sometimes with referees who are ticking boxes and have assessors in the stands all the time watching them, and they do everything by the book. And sometimes that can create a poor spectacle for the supporters when he's penalising, you know, left, right and centre to break down. I think Nigel has the freedom, because he is such an accomplished referee, to do it his way, and his way is trying to make the game as entertaining as possible, and he refs it that way, and the I think the players and the supporters get a better spectacle as a result.
So Gerry, from your perspective now in the pack, was Nigel's voice peeping all the time in the one-liners, was that a good thing in your book?
I don't think it's like it gets overplayed a little bit, the idea of him and the one-liners and stuff like that. They're there, but he's, you know, I think everyone respects him first and foremost because he's a very good referee, and I'd agree with Paddy, which probably when directives come out from the referee's assessors, some referees will actually go so to the letter of the law, they'll go overboard to a degree that will actually, I suppose, it stops the flow of the game, whereas I think Nigel has his own, he's enough experience to allow the game to go and, you know, maintaining the standards that are required for of consistency across both sides, but he does it with his own kind of flavour, and I think he's consistent all the time, and he has the respect of both teams every time he plays because they know he's not afraid to make hard calls, and that's basically what you want. I think the fact that he sometimes will come out with a couple of one-liners, people might think that he's taking the piss a little bit, but I think that's just his flavour that he puts on the game.
Yeah, Victor, I mean, he certainly seems to have an empathy for the game. I think what Gerry's getting at there is that the letter of the law is not always what a rugby match needs.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly flexible. He's a great ambassador for a sport, for the wider audience that may only watch certain games now and again. I think he backs up his presence, his social media presence and his off-the-pitch presence with a huge knowledge of the game. So he's not easily bullied by teams, by captains or indeed coaches before a game. So he has that respect, and you certainly need more of the type of Nigel Owens. But again, it comes down to the knowledge he has and the history and tradition he has in the game and the knowledge and experience he's built up today.
So one thing from last weekend, I suppose, was you saw another referee, and English was not his first language, in a challenging situation who, I think, from my position of ignorance, did rather well. Romain Poit, a person who has not always received the greatest commentary in Irish quarters. Pat, I mean, you were watching the game like everyone else, and it was some very innovative tactics from Italy. How do you think Romain dealt with it?
It was good, and it was good to kind of hear from Conor O'Shea at the end of the game to say that they had had that conversation before the game, and he let him know that this is what they were going to be doing. So even though the English players took around 40 minutes to get their heads around it, Poit kind of knew what was coming, and it was just so interesting to kind of, it's great to have the kind of ref link sometimes and to hear what the English players were saying to him, and they seemed completely confused by the whole thing. And I think one of my favourite exchanges about the whole thing was that Haskell asking, is it a ruck? How can I make it a ruck? And Poit was kind of going, listen, I can't tell you. You know, you're going to have to talk to your coaches. Like, so, you know, not a guy known for his sense of humour, but maybe we got a chance to kind of see how well he handled it. And I thought he did well. I think Poit did really well in that situation.
Victor, what do you think of the post-match reaction from Eddie Jones? He came out extraordinarily strongly for something that it just seemed that maybe his team just wasn't prepared to think on the pitch.
Well, pretty much in England, the media are quite ruthless. And going into that game, Eddie Jones probably was expecting and hoping for a 70-point drubbing against Italy, particularly at home, if you look at what Ireland did away over in Rome, and where Conor O'Shea was trying to stop that. So after the match, particularly at half-time when it was quite tight, I mean, we all probably knew that England were going to play the power game and blow Italy away in the second half, but certainly for the first half, he probably... in a PR way, got rid of his detractors by kicking his toys out of the cot and blaming Conor O'Shea and attacking Conor O'Shea and his tactics, and that probably took the focus off the lack of reaction or the lack of adaptability of his team in the first half. And it's a lesson to all of us, and that great picture of Haskell and Dylan Hartley looking at Romo Poit, who indeed, after being tipped off by Conor O'Shea before the game, I'm sure, like everyone else, hit the rule book just to check out what would possibly happen. But that scene where the lads were asking, you know, is this right, is this wrong, that kind of stumped England for the first half, and they didn't have an answer. So I'm sure there was a lot of grievances at half time, a lot of frustration, and that came out in the interview. And like a typical Australian coach, there's been plenty of them, including players, they blame everyone else. So, you know, everyone's under pressure in the Six Nations, coaches particularly. And the prawn sandwich brigade were hoping for a 70-point walk in the park. And when that didn't happen, Eddie Jones reacted in a manner which I wouldn't say is in tradition of the game, but it caused a huge outcry anyway.
Yeah, no, I thought it was very disrespectful, the reaction from some outlets, Eddie Jones in particular. Matt Dawson can be included in that, I think. I thought it was very innovative tactics by Conor O'Shea and Brendan Venter. They obviously came with a game plan and they executed it very well, and it took to the half 60 minutes before England sort of ran away with that game in the end. But Victor's right, it could have been a cricket score going into the game after seeing what Ireland were capable of doing to it. You know, what is still a subpar Italian team when you compare them to the other nations in the Six Nations now. So they had to come up with something different, and they produced a very good game plan, and the English were flummoxed by it, and you know, that came out in their reaction. But I think Victor's right, it hid the inaccuracies in that English performance in the opening 10-15 minutes. They didn't play very well at all, and Italy only used that tactic, as Andy said, you know, once or twice in the first 10-15 minutes. It was a poor performance, and it sort of glosses over some of the cracks in that English performance by blaming the Italians and blaming Conor O'Shea.
Yeah, it was extraordinary to watch that match back in detail. Look, so watching sort of every instance, pausing, watching where the players were, which I did it because I've far too much time on my hands. And it was really apparent, when you know what's going to happen, how bad England were. Because for the first 7 minutes, they'd given away a knock-on, a Sydney penalty. They were overthrowing a line-out, and Italy weren't punishing them. But they should have been much further behind in that game. And this tactic didn't actually happen that often, but it seemed to really upset them. Why do you think that the players couldn't react on the field in an organised way?
I think they were just a bit shell-shocked because it's the unexpected. They haven't seen it probably before. I mean, I know... You know, the Chiefs have used it down in the Super Rugby before, but you know, it's not something that's happened in the Six Nations or a club level over here in the Northern Hemisphere. So I think they were aware of the law, but they just weren't in a position to react to it. You know, Test rugby is a tough environment, and you have to make decisions, and you need good leadership in those times whenever you are throwing a few curveballs and you need to react, and you know, you have to get 15 players to react the same way. You know, it's difficult, and it did take to half time until they sort of came up with a decent game plan, or even sort of 35 minutes whenever they started picking and going up the middle and keeping the ball off the ground and mauling it a bit more. Those seemed to be the tactics that they employed. They brought Jack Noel on in the second half, and he seemed to just pick and go through the rucks quite a lot. So they adapted their tactics, but it did take a while.
I suppose Ireland are not, we've used the odd unconventional tactic before. Victor, you were on the field the day of the great 13 or 15 man lineout, depending on what your view is. What kind of planning went into that, and do you know if there was a word with the ref beforehand to make sure that he knew what was going on?
There wouldn't be a word with the ref beforehand. It was very much, you know, my idea of these left field creations are normally because you actually don't have faith in your players, so you got to think outside the box and freeze the opposition for a period of time. I think last weekend, England versus Italy, the English team came out, and realistically the only opposition they had or felt they had before the game was the clock. They needed to be up by 20 points 15 minutes to go, first 15 minutes, and be up by 40 points at half time, and that's the way they were thinking. So, you know, with the 15-man lineout back in Warren Gatland's day, it was a tactic that we got close to their line, that we'd win the lineout, and we'd have enough people in to get them all over the line and score. Now, you know, obviously at that time we didn't have great faith in his forwards being strong enough to do it, so therefore we needed the added back line. But like everything, Andy, these things are very, very dangerous, you know, and if you do have a side that thinks on the spot the way a side should do, and this brings you back to thinking, you know, you look at Eddie Jones as a dominant coach. Is he such a dictator that the guys just have a game plan and can't think on the pitch the way they should be able to think on the pitch? So if you do have a side that thinks there and then, and as Paddy said, leadership-wise as well, a captain, they say, listen, this isn't working, let's go up the middle, as Jerry says, and adapt straight away, then you're in serious trouble because you've exposed your backline aren't there anymore, basically. So it's a tactic, but in hindsight, I just think it's just buying time, really. And from Conor's point of view, after the Irish game, you know, he wanted to keep the score down. And that's an unfortunate thing for Italy, because everyone wants Italy to do well, but I think that's pretty much all that tactic did do, and I think it shows that there isn't as much faith in the standard game from a coach if they are thinking out of left field.
Jerry, some might say, which is my way of saying I'm saying it, other teams might have said the choke tackle might have been a similar thing when Ireland started using it, you know, a lot at test level. Did you get a reaction from other teams? Did you feel there was one when Ireland started doing that?
Probably not. The choke tackle was probably not construed as negatively as say not competing and not forming a ruck so that you can not form an offside line. The choke tackle was a technique. It probably came in predominantly from rugby league, where they'll try and get, you know, two men into the tackle each time. So if you're carrying, if the opposition are carrying high into the tackle, you may not go for line speed so much. You may not try and have fellas coming up as hard as they can, because you tend to maybe lose the integrity of your defensive line then. But they would try and maintain the integrity as they come up, not come up as quickly. And if the opposition carry high, they'll try and wrap two players into the tackle. And then I suppose when we were with Les, when I worked with Ireland with Les Kiss, the predominant thing is we try and almost sandwich that attacker, so we could try and get ourselves on the opposition side then, and then we try and hold it up. They're tactics, and you just have to prepare for them. And if teams have done their analysis well coming in, they'll, you know, when we play teams, if you look at Edinburgh, a team who like to choke tackle, Ospreys are another team that will try and choke tackle. The Ospreys used to be a really hard team at their line speed. They're more about integrity now and trying getting two men in. So if you carry in, you know, one-off runners, and if that one-off runner carries high, there's a good chance that you'll end up getting turned over. So you make your focus that week about trying to carry your lower and have fellas, when they do hit contact, that they work really hard on the ground. And you know, there's pros and cons to both, but you need to be preparing for them. That's why it's good to analyse the opposition, understand what they're trying to do first. I think sometimes what I've learned over the last few years, that, you know, I suppose when I used to play, it was always about like, just focus on what we're going to do. But from a coaching perspective, you really need to take it on board what the opposition are doing and counter that. And then if that allows you to do your plan more effectively, then you're in a really good place.
So that's rugby past. Let's move to rugby future. Ireland's game in Wales, Pat McCarry, Wales say it's a must win. Is Welsh rugby under pressure here?
Yeah, oh, massively so. Yeah, like they're out of the championship already, and Howley, I was saying, I think I mentioned it in one of the earlier episodes, he's under pressure even before the championship started. There's this impression that, like, he is the caretaker, but that Gatlin's off looking after the Lions and Howley's just being left there, you know, pushing the broom, and he's been given a set, you know, thing of instructions to kind of, this is how it's going to work, don't veer too far from the script. And he, you know, he's not really the guy in charge. Gatlin's probably still kind of there, but it's like, it's a kind of a piecemeal solution for them, and the results haven't gone well. They probably should have beaten England, you know, in that last game out as well. And then, again, they could have beaten Scotland as well. They had a kind of try ruled out, but a lot of...
You mean if Scotland hadn't played well?
well, that was a big factor in it as well, but they're under pressure, but, and they're playing for pride now. Like, so it'll be interesting to see if they make any changes for this. So I was saying Sam Davies got another man of the match performance there for Ospreys. So, you know, while it might be good to see him coming in, I think a lot of, you know, Joe Schmidt probably be happier in a way that if bigger was to start than if they're to keep going the way they were.
Victor, like, Wales have only scored 5 tries in the tournament so far, and they've played Italy. Why are they misfiring?
I think they're misfiring because of simply Rob Howley isn't as good a motivator as Warren Gatland is. To a certain sense, some of their club performances haven't been wonderful in the Pro 12. But if you look from Irish perspective, 6 months ago, you would have looked at this game as being the biggest threat for the campaign. You know, everyone talks about a possible Grand Slam against England on Paddy's weekend, but we have to play Wales in the Millennium Stadium. So there are differences in that environment. It's a very hostile environment to play in. So I think they've certainly got a one big performance in them. I'd be very worried about that game, only for the fact of taking a wider view. Obviously, Ireland coughed up the Scottish game by probably thinking in a narrow-minded fashion. So this is the game. They have to beat Wales away in order to achieve a Six Nations victory and for the bigger prize. But it's going to be very dangerous over there. No matter how bad they're playing Wales at the moment, they haven't been far off winning. You know, many coaches will always say there's not much between winning or losing, very small margins. So I think they're not far off a performance, but I don't think they've got a strong coach leadership or in terms of motivation or direction in Rob Howley. And I think they've kind of, their graph has gone slowly downwards since Gatland leaves them. Now, I'm sure he's in the background somewhere, and I'm sure he's stick his head into training, because ultimately that's his day business. But from a Irish point of view, I think they're going to be still very dangerous.
Paddy, off air, you were saying that you were thinking back to an analysis session with Eddie O'Sullivan, and what he was going through is exactly the same way as Wales play today. Do you want to talk us through a bit of that?
Yeah, it's quite a, you know, pragmatic style of play, and it hasn't evolved much in sort of the last 10 years under Warren Gatland, however long he's been at the helm, and the Lions adopted as well. Seemingly, it seems to be just a same way pattern that. It's an attritional pattern. They get the fours going around the corner, the likes of Faletau, and trying to get that gain line. And they use the full width of the pitch, even if they've a 5-7 metre blindside, they'll still keep going the same way and try and reload the backs into an attacking formation in order to strike them, either in the middle of the pitch or out wide. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, if Rob Howley has the freedom to put his own stamp on the coaching. You know, one probably area that they may target is the narrowness sometimes that the Irish team can get into when they're attacking. And with Sam Warburton and Tipperick in the team, they may focus heavily on the breakdown, try and get turnovers. Because you can see whenever Argentina were able to turn the ball over in the World Cup and put width on the game, Ireland, you know, they cut Ireland apart. And in some respects, Scotland did the same to them. You know, when they get width on the ball from turnovers, they look very dangerous against that Irish team.
So talk me through this. So how is it that Ireland's attacking makes Ireland narrow?
Well, Joe Schmidt puts such an emphasis on the ruck, and that goes from 1 to 15. So even if you're a back or, you know, a centre or a winger, you're always committed to, you're not staying out of the rucks. You're heavily involved in that, especially when you go wide. So that compresses sometimes in the attack, and backs can find themselves quite tight into the ruck. So if they get exposed with a turnover, then those backs aren't in the wide positions to defend, and that's where mismatches can happen and Wales can put width on the ball and hopefully exploit that from their point of view.
Is that a mental thing as well as just a positional thing, that it's always in the back of the mind that I'm going to have to hit this ruck as opposed to...
It's just the way Joe coaches, I think, that he puts such an emphasis on your technique at ruck, and everybody has to have an ability to do that, and if they don't, they don't lace up their boots for Joe. So it's a tactic he employs and has been very, very successful, and it's very difficult to turn the ball over against an Irish team, but if they do get turned over, then it can be exploited as well.
Gerry, in terms of a defensive system, how do you counter a scrum half like Rhys Webb, who is just lethal?
Well, I suppose, like we said earlier, if the first place you'll try and get your defence right when you're starting, a starting point with any team is your ruck deep, and Rhys Webb is a player who tests you there. But I think if you look at Andy Farrell, he's gonna have his homework done on Rhys Webb, and the main thing is that the more you call a guy out, like Rhys Webb is a guy who likes to put his own mark on the game, so he's gonna want to make a couple of breaks himself. If you give him space, he'll take them early doors, and then he's got his confidence is up. But if you keep closing off that space, he's probably gonna have to he'll probably try it when it's not on then later on, and that's when it probably turns against him. But he is very dangerous. He's got good fundamentals. He's quick. He's got a low centre of gravity, and he's reasonably strong in contact as well. So he is able to take the ball on there. I think the downside is when you're playing with Rhys Webb is that sometimes he might force that a little bit. But he's undoubtedly one of the best nines in Europe at the moment.
So we've got a reasonably settled Irish team, which is a good thing to happen. Until this point, relatively few injuries. So, Pat, what are we looking like in terms of the squad now and potential selection issues?
Yeah, there was all accounts, like, and of course you won't know until the team is announced on Wednesday about Rob Kearney. There seems to be a big drama every week, but like, is this guy fit or not, and trying to get stuff through. They were watertight about the whole Sexton thing, and nothing was getting out about him until he was named in the team. But I think we have Delan is out, and Andrew Trimble, who kind of broke a bone in his hand there in that Treviso win at the weekend. So the fact that Trimble is out now kind of means they probably won't change that back three. If Kearney can kind of prove to them that he's kind of fit, you can imagine Kearney staying in there, because the other option, of course, was dropping Zeebo to full back and having Trimble on the wing. But you can't really see any changes to the starting 15 now, and maybe it's just a bench, there might be a couple of changes. So I'd kind of thought with Tommy Bowe being recalled that he might be back on the bench, but then Paddy had pointed out a man that I've been going on about all last week and somehow managed to forget, Jared Payne, is back in the mix. So I'll be interested to see if he does come in.
Victor, do they bring in Jared Payne into this midfield?
I think that was sending out the wrong signals, to be honest. I mean, there's a lot of talk about it recently. I mean, obviously you're allowed to have your, I suppose, first choice, your place back if you go out through injury, but I think it would be very narrow-minded to put him back in. After the Scottish game, there was a lot of talk about if Jared Payne was there in defence. He's very mouthy in defence, and he's very authoritative in defence. Maybe some of the tries might not happen, so I can understand from a defensive point of view his selection. But I think the greatest legacy from beating the All Blacks gave Joe Smith and the selectors a chance to kind of think of the wider view of, let's not panic. This team, the Irish team, did extremely well against Italy. It was a dogged game against France in the first half, did very well in the second half, so why change the winning formula? So I think it was sending out the wrong signals. I know that this group of players don't really know they're starting until that team is announced, so there's a little bit of insecurity from within the squad as to keeping everyone on their toes, but certainly to have him there, and of course he can play fullback as well as both centre positions, is a huge benefit to the squad itself. But maybe starting might be a bit too much.
Yeah, so a useful person to have on the bench either way. I think, friends, there's a few players in that Irish back line who can shift around a bit, but
yeah.
I cannot move. I cannot talk about the Millennium Stadium without this man in the studio. I know, yeah. Look, I have to. I'm playing bad cop here. 2009 Grand Slam game. Wayne Barnes is your favourite human, correct?
He is, yes. He's a great guy. Love Wayne.
To share with the class.
Yeah, obviously talking about the time I was able to clinch us the Grand Slam by giving away that penalty.
It was a time wasting effort.
ending Wales's chances to score a try or kick a penalty. But yeah, no, it was something that is part of my career. It's sort of an iconic moment in that, giving away that penalty at the end of the Grand Slam decider in Cardiff at the Millennium Stadium. And very, very bittersweet moment. There's I don't know where to start whenever I talk about it.
Well, what was in your head at the time when the kick's going towards the posts?
Yeah, I was in shock. I mean, it was just an eerie, strange feeling. I gave away the penalty. The Wayne Barnes's arm went up, and the enormity of it all just hit me straight away. So I can only compare it to, I was in a car crash when I was 10 years old, and I went into shock after that, and it felt something similar. It all hit me at once, floated back to the post, and before I knew it, Stephen Jones was lining up the kick, and it sailed, thankfully, just short. Jordan Murphy caught the ball and kicked it into the stand, and I breathed a very large sigh of relief.
So that was what was in your head. Jerry, what was in your head? Because you were there as well.
I suppose to say years ago, Paddy, you gotta let it go. And I we were nervous, but I suppose in the end it just made the whole thing more exciting. Not that I would want one of the Munster lads to do that now, just to add in, make things stir things up a little bit more. But yeah, I was actually off the field at the time, and I was watching, and I just went, oh God, I hope this kick doesn't go over. And when Stephen Jones struck it initially, I thought it was good. And as only as it just died, then it was coming to the post. But, and I probably, because you're just constantly on to the next thing every week in rugby, I never even realised that thing might sit with Paddy. I think it was probably the following Six Nations, Paddy, when we were over in Paris, and we were chatting to you about it. And Paulie said to me afterwards, I was there, Paulie goes, man, that was like a big thing for Paddy. And I was like, oh, I never even give it a second thought, because we won the game and we've done. But I suppose...
Yeah. Okay, yeah, it was
that's your legacy, man. That's your legacy.
Yeah, it's a shit legacy. But it was just something that you think of from, at that time, when the what ifs of if it did go over, and it's hard sometimes not to think like that.
You mean the parallel universe where that ball goes over?
Well, that ball goes over, yeah. And what that means, with Ireland don't win the Grand Slam, and 65 years of waiting, we have to wait longer. And the disappointment of everybody involved in the dressing room, first and foremost, and then the wider scale of the country and the disappointment. I think you'd be packing your bags and moving. I'd be moving somewhere else.
But there was an interesting end to that. Okay, so Wayne Barnes is not your favourite human at the time. What happens next?
This sounds like excuse making a bit, but he tapped me on the shoulder a couple of months later when he was reffing another match. And we were at a dinner or something after the game, and he tapped me on the shoulder and he said, listen, apologies, I checked that on the video, and probably if I got to the ruck a couple of seconds earlier, I would have penalised the Welsh band for holding onto the ground, but as my view was slightly blocked at the time. But, and then whenever I arrived, he looked like he'd come in from the side, but so sorry about that. And I was like, yeah, thanks. Yeah, a bit late now. Yeah.
There was, I remember seeing those pictures at the end of the game, and Rog and stuff in the Welsh jersey and stuff, and Prince William was in there shaking hands and stuff. Did he say thanks for trying?
Yeah, he was walking around just chatting, shaking everybody's hand, and he sort of said to me, why are you so glum? And I said, well, I was the dickhead that gave away the penalty at the end there. So,
Your Highness.
Yeah, Your Highness, yeah. But he said, well, it didn't go over, so cheer up. So,
Give us a prediction for next week.
I actually think Ireland are a much, much better side, playing much better rugby at the moment. I do think it's going to be a bit of an arm wrestle for 60 minutes, but I think the bookies have it quite tight. I would see Ireland winning by 7 to 10 points, I think it's going to be a great atmosphere because it's a Friday night as well. I think it'll add something special. I don't think Ireland have played any games in the Six Nations on a Friday night, so that just adds to the occasion as well. But I see Ireland being the better team and coming away with a victory, sort of 15 to 10 minutes to go. I think they'll sort of pull away from the Welsh team.
Jerry, prediction?
I'd agree with Paddy. I'd probably go with Ireland plus 10 at this stage.
I would think that Ireland's top five are probably going to be too strong for Wales, and I think that they're going to get a lot. That's going to be a key area for Ireland to get set piece momentum, get momentum from the set piece, and then I suppose the only way that I can see Wales really getting in, and I agree with Victor that they have quality right through their team, and there's no doubt that they can win the game. I just don't see them being able to do it. The only real thing is, like Paddy said, when Ireland put, if they're any way slack at the breakdown, which I know that from the lads who work with Joe, that Joe makes, that's the heartbeat of the whole team. With the likes of Tipperick and Warburton and their Wynn Jones, they're good players on a poach. If they can turn them over, then there's enough quality in the back line in Wales to open them up. But I just don't see it happening. I think Joe will have, that's the one area that he prides himself more than anywhere else, and he'll be well prepared for those lads. And I think that Ireland's type five will really turn the screw on Wales, and I can see Ireland winning by plus 10 points.
Right, I'm going to go round the last two very quickly. Victor, give me a score.
I agree with the lads, 7 to 10 points. I think the first 20 minutes is going to be all huff and puff from a Welsh point of view, both the crowd and the team, and fireworks everywhere, the whole lot. But I said ultimately, Ireland have momentum. If the more time that Joe Smith has with this team, which unfortunately he didn't have before the Scottish game, the better this team is getting. So I think the momentum's with Ireland, and they're a very hard team to stop.
Pat McCarry, score.
I'm not predicting bonus point wins this time, but yeah, Ireland by less than five. I'm not going to be quite as confident as the lads, but Ireland.
Okay, and I'm going to say I've got a feeling in my waters, and it's going to be Ireland to win by two. Okay. Right, that's enough talk about the international game for a while, at least at the test level. We will be back with talk of Ireland legends versus England legends, featuring some incredible athletes among us.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
And we're back, and we're going to look ahead to the Ireland legends versus England legends, the Remembering Anthony Foley match at the RDS on Friday the 17th of March at 6 p.m. There's a good few Irish legends, probably some fitter than others at this stage. Not looking at anyone in particular, Paddy. Jerry, you're looking forward to the game?
Yeah, I am, but I'm afraid that I think Shane Byrne is generally the guy who organises this thing every year, so he's probably going to end up picking himself ahead of me, which is pretty poor form. But I suppose if he's putting in the most of the legwork, then I'll be fresh when I come on.
Flannery slams legends coaching ticket. Yeah, I see the headline now.
Yeah.
Paddy, how's the body?
Other than five-a-side football once a week, I haven't laced my boots up at all, so it'll be the first game I've played for about 3 years, I think, now. So, a bit nervous, to be honest. The English team seem to have a few decent players who haven't retired too long ago as well, but it'll be a bit of crack, and really, really looking forward to the occasion. And it's a great cause as well, and hopefully everybody comes out to support it at the RDS.
So I'm going to read through a couple of the Irish players that are, and this is all subject to final availability, Kieran Dawson, Mel Dean, Simon Mason, Justin Bishop, Alan Quinlan, Mick O'Driscoll, Gordon Darcy, Raj, the list goes on. Now, how about on the English side, Pat?
Yeah, as Paddy said, a few of the lads who's just recently retired, Ian Balshaw is supposed to be playing, Mark Quaido as well, World Cup winner as well, wasn't he, in 2003, as well as Lewis Moody, who's going to be there. He's a decent lad. Hugo Magne might feature as well, and then Mike Tindall too, so you might have a little bit of competition there in midfield, Paddy.
Yeah, by the sounds of it, yeah.
Hugo Magne will bring on his own cameraman with him.
Taking selfies of himself running down the wing.
Wearing a bow tie. Yeah.
He's still absolutely ripped, like, as well. He's a gym bunny, so he's never out of the gym. You can see him on Instagram and working out with Mel Dean, actually, his former teammate at Harlequins. And hopefully Mel's in good shape anyway when he comes over to join the Irish team.
So on a more serious subject, this is being played in honour of Anthony Foley. And I suppose, Jerry, from the Munster side of things, both personally and professionally, how has life been?
I suppose, you end up just getting on with things, but it never goes back to normal, because there is no back to normal now because Axel is gone. We reference him every single week, and you just try and, you don't ever want to make it cliched when you talk about Axel. or try and be manipulative about trying to get results or inspire performances. Inspire results. We just talk about performance and effort when we talk about Axel, because that's all Axel ever wanted, and it's probably something that it only came about after Axel passed that the focus switched from outcome to just effort and just, you know, giving. I know it sounds corny, but just giving your all every time you go out, and I think that's the players and us as a management group, we see it that it's okay to make mistakes when they're skill mistakes, or, you know, when you're trying something. But, you know, because before we used to probably, I suppose we used to paralyze ourselves a little bit with fear of making an error, and that used to frustrate Axel so much. And I suppose if anything, we just use it as a reminder, and it gives us perspective on life as well, because we used to get so caught up on winning and losing, and when Axel passed, it was a real eye-opener for all of us, really. And, you know, you get on with things, but it never goes back to normal, is what I'd say.
Victor, how do you remember your fellow number eight?
Well, you know, Axel was probably my biggest competitor. I was, you know, when you're competing for a jersey or for a club against each other or for a province, you kind of almost have a degree in that person. And I played against Axel for Mary's against Shannon and Leinster versus Munster. And, you know, then luckily enough, while competing for one position, we ended up playing together near the end of my career. I played six and Axel played eight. And, you know, it's always a very hard subject to go back to, because the impact he had on my life was huge. And the way Gerry speaks there and the way Munster have handled this whole unfortunate tragedy has been so dignified and classy, and it's a testament to the guy himself, because Axel was one of these guys that just really, really believed in Shannon rugby, believed in Munster rugby, and believed in Irish rugby. He, you know, even in the back row in the last couple of matches I played with him, we'd shift around positions in defence and attack. There was no ego, there was no competitiveness once you're in the same team. So there's a huge amount of respect there, and, you know, the fact of his passing, Axel is kind of, you know, the died word is never used. It's just a passing, and every time there's, like, this Legends game come up, it's kind of guys getting together who he was very much part of the DNA of everyone there. So it's 100% what Gerry says about it. It never goes back. It's not a normal situation for people to deal with. And I think the rugby community as a whole should be very proud. And the whole episode of the funeral down in Killaloe, it was a fantastic couple of days. And then it lives on in spirit, in a way, with the Legends game coming up. And, of course, there's plenty of stuff the guys are trying to do for their own personal memories of Anthony and his family in the coming year, summer anniversary. So it's hard to swallow. A lot of guys have done some soul searching in terms of their own medical situations, and we all played in the same team as Axel. I wouldn't say I had the same fitness level as he had, but we all you know, did the same job at 9 to 5 or 24 hours a day, whatever way professional rugby was back then. And you know, he's, as Gerry says, you can't cliche. He's very much with us, and you think of him and you talk about him. But certainly, to be cliched when it comes to Axel is something that, you know, and I see Gerry Boyd, and it's just something that just doesn't fit, because a guy like himself, so soon, with a young family, Axel was a very simple guy. When I say simple, he was very devoted to what he believed in, and that was family, his father Brendan, his history, his tradition in Shannon Rugby Club. And, you know, his love for Munster and his love for Ireland, his love for Shannon. And that was very hard to play against, that commitment. Very hard to play against with the loyalty he had to his own family, his own tradition, and indeed his club, which was the heart of the man himself.
Yeah, I think death is one of those intrusions from the real world that, when it introduces itself to sport, excuse me, can seem very artificial. It happened to me when I was 18. We lost a player in a car crash, and for a group of 18-year-old lads, it was certainly a sharpener in terms of the realities of life. Obviously, Ulster Rugby went through the passing of Evan Spence. from the players' perspective, Paddy, what's that like?
Yes, it's sent shockwaves through the club and through the community, through the rugby community in Ulster, through Ireland, and further afield. And you know, it shows the greatness of the sport that through tragedy like that, you know, the whole sporting world and community comes together. It's a very difficult time for all squads involved in tragedies like that. I think that you learn a lot through those tragedies about both yourself and you know, the benefit of rugby can help you through that as well. And you know, it was a very tough time, and tough time for not just the passing of Evan, but also his family, his brother, his father, and everybody rallied around you know, his mother and sister, and they're still part of the, you know, the Ulster rugby community. And when we can, I think people are teammates are still staying in touch with them, rightfully so, and I'm making sure everything, you know, that can be done for them to help them, because, you know, that never goes away for them. You know, we move on, we play matches the next week, the next season, and he's still remembered. You know, Ulster set up a centre to educate players in rugby, and you know, they happily named it after Nevin, the Nevin Spence Centre, and you know, that gets kids coming to that every week from schools all around Ulster to learn about rugby and learn about all the great benefits that it brings in, you know, from a personal development till I think it's second to none as a sport.
So we'll move on to, I suppose, the happier thing, which is next week. Are you feeling competitive about this one?
I've got to get through a wedding in New York as well first. I've Darren Cave, a teammate of mine, is getting married over in New York, so I've got a week of New York and eating and drinking to get through first before I hit the pitch of the RDS. So not much training will be done, and hopefully that'll be the same for everybody involved. And there's 30 odd in the squad, hopefully rolling subs every 5 minutes, but the likes of Ronan and stuff, I'm not sure. It'll be very easy to get him off the pitch. He's such a competitive monster. Some guys will be hard to shift off the pitch. Some, like Munch, will be maybe quicker to look for Jerry to come in off the sidelines.
What do you reckon, Jerry? You reckon he'll be getting a quick run there, do you?
Yeah, I think, like Victor said earlier, like the only thing you really worry about is getting injuries. I had to retire with my calf, and I've only played one game since. And it was Matt Hampson who was injured and got paralysed playing for an England age grade side, and he was affiliated with Leicester Rugby Club, and through Johnny Murphy and through Jordan Murphy, their connections with Leicester, they got in contact and asked if I would take part in a charity game he was organising between a Matt Hampson select versus a Leicester Legends team. And I went over, and I just thought, okay, I'll see how this will go. The scrums weren't live or anything like that, so I thought that might ease it a little bit. But when I think back on it, like, people think it's just, like, people might think that we're going to just rock up to play the game. But I was nervous. I was so nervous before I played this Legends game against Leicester the last time. This is like 2-3 years ago, and I know that I'm going to be the same next week, because no matter what way you put it, you've played rugby for so long that it is part of your identity. That you would hate to go out and give a really poor performance, or I would hate to go out and give a really poor performance. Doesn't mean it's not the be all and end all for me, but it still is important, you know, because like I've played rugby my whole life and I love the game and I want to go out and do my best. And what's also interesting is that there'll be a lot of guys there that I haven't played with from that Irish Legends team, and I deep down there's a weird part of me that wants to try and impress them. I want to, you know, you always want to win the respect of your peers when you play, so that's going to be where I am going into it anyway, and hopefully I'll get a good run, and you know, and hopefully first and foremost no injuries, and then hopefully we beat England and we play okay.
Oh, Jerry, just remember that the sleeves rolled up and the guns pumped for that first line out, like everyone remembered, and that'll be keep a lot of people happy. So that's Ireland Legends versus England Legends. That'll take place at the RDS Friday the 17th of March with kickoff at 6 p.m. Tickets are currently available. Victor and Jerry, we'll let you go. We'll come back with Pat's Pro 12 and Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
And we're back with the Guinness Pro 12 Roundup, brought to you by the clamorous Pat McCarry.
Hey, how are you? Just was kicking off, I suppose, and it was an absolutely brutal weekend, I suppose, in terms of weather. But we actually had a good story on Sports Show about some fan over at the sports ground in Galway had the umbrella turned into crap, and they just had it upside down on their head as a hat, which is kind of great innovation out west. And but Connacht did enough, like, because on nights like that, as we kind of saw with Ulster, like, it's to get the bonus point is a job well done, and they did that, 33 points to 13 in the end. And yeah, they think they looked really well. Kind of thing that sums up Connacht season is they had four different guys taking conversions for them. Shows you the kind of injuries they've had, and so that kind of summed it up. They got the job done, though. They'll be happy enough with that. So they're within 7 points now at the Champions Cup places. So they're back there, and they have a game to make up against Zebra as well. So they'll be back up there sniffing for that fifth and sixth place spot. So good weekend for them, and then a really good weekend for Munster as well. They came from behind again, like to win in Wales. Another good win over Cardiff. Rory Scanlon had to take over as out half there for most of the game, kicked 10 points, got himself a drop goal as well. And then there was a really interesting try in that with Saili pretending he was on a ruck, and we were saying it wasn't a ruck because there was no men. Kind of, it was kind of similar to the England Italy thing, and Nick Williams was caught out with his hands on his knees puffing away, and Saili just nipped up and scored a try. So big win for Munster. They're kind of in touch. And then we kind of had Ulster as well. Talking about wretched night, Paddy would have seen this game up at Kingspan. It was another horrible night. Good to see Jared Payne back scoring a try, but they just couldn't get the job done in the end. And what did you kind of make of it yourself, Paddy?
Yeah, it was a horrendous night. I think they had a pitch inspection about half an hour to an hour before kickoff, and there was a lot of surface water, but it was deemed playable, and it was never going to be a glamorous game of rugby. And Ulster didn't come away with a bonus point. They'll be very disappointed. I'm sure Les Kiss read them the Riot Act after, because, you know, going into half time they had opportunities to score tries, and they just didn't execute well. And then in the last sort of 10 minutes when they were chasing that bonus point, they had a couple of good opportunities that they just didn't take. But they'll be disappointed, because you need to take those bonus points from those Italian teams, especially at home. But the conditions didn't help, obviously. But to have Jared Payne back was a big bonus, and for him to get 380 minutes straight away was great. And unfortunately, with one in, it seems one out with Andrew Trimble, you know, having a hand injury now, so I'm not sure the extent of that injury, but disappointing for him.
Yeah, I thought actually Olding had a great game. He set up Pietau with a great kick there across. He was looking well, and you know, I think some of the young lads are actually looking well, and this is a big chance to shine for them, isn't it? In these kind of international breaks. And another couple of lads who did well are the boys down at Leinster as well. We saw Ross Byrne having a great game, and Joey Carberry, they say he's not a fullback, but I think he gained 90 metres off 6 or 7 runs, and he had a brilliant game, another 2 tries for himself. So, you know, not a bad fullback option, I suppose, if Nisei was out as well. But you were saying you were impressed with them in the second half, Andy, weren't you?
That second half performance from Leinster was frightening. Like, when they click, people always say when Leinster click, they're very hard to live with. But this was not Leinster's first choice team. This is the young lads, and they were frightening. But it was odd to see how poorly Scarlets coped with the cross kick tactic. Once that's happened once, you don't let a carbon copy happen again. But Leinster did it brilliantly. Adam Burns running off those kicks was fantastic, keeping the ball alive in the tackle. You had Carberry following up. And then Ed Byrne crashing over as well, which is another good story, having been out for so long. But I think that there's a frightening degree of talent, and compared to where we might have thought we were a couple of years back, this is just, it's amazing to watch, it's great to watch, and Leinster top of the table with the young lads. That puts them in a very good place.
And it's very envious looking down from Ulster, the conveyor belt of talent that seems to come through the Leinster ranks every year. There's just more and more, you know, players that could, you know, play at a very high level, and they're in a good system there, and you know, they have strength and depth. And whenever there are those breaks for international rugby, you know, Leinster are always very competitive because of the strength and depth that they have.
Yeah, they're looking really good. I was just having a look at the points table there, and 76 tries from 17 games. Like, so they're nearly averaging just under 5 tries a game. So it's, you know, they're looking good. And then they've got around 20 lads to come back as well after the international break.
Yeah, the biggest difficulty is fitting all that talent back in. That's not bad. So we have been joined by Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes. Hello, Hayley.
Hello.
What are the odds for the Pro 12 at the moment? Because Leinster are sitting pretty well on top.
Yeah, but they're only slight favourites at 11-8. Munster are just behind them at 6-4. Ospreys 5-1. Ulster 9-1, and Scarlets 28-1, 200-1 bar.
And I suppose that's it. Like, it's, you kind of have the lads. You know, there'll be kind of, as you said, a lot of kind of bets going on. But have you kind of seen maybe Ulster kind of slipping up against Scarlets recently? Has their odds dropped off a little bit recently, and Leinster's kind of got even tougher to kind of place a bet on?
I think Ulster have drifted in the betting.
They've put some. I suppose even the fact that they didn't get a bonus point, that people kind of lose a bit of confidence in them, wouldn't they? But I don't know. As we talked about the kind of form that Leinster are in, you can see a lot of people all of a sudden starting to put money on them. I'd say the price will keep dropping as well.
Yeah, they definitely look to shorten in the betting over the next couple of weeks, I'd say.
So looking way further ahead, past the Pro 12 and the Champions Cup and the Six Nations, Owen Farrell as Lions captain.
Yeah.
How likely is that to happen?
This is a conversation now, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we thought it was about a 12-1 shot, and just this week, like, 3 or 4 really significant bets came for him, and now he's half that price. So he's 6-1, and actually in the player markets, then we're also seeing money for Camille Lopez in the top point scorer for the Six Nations. He was actually backable at 100-1 at the start, and he's gone into 11-8. And I suppose everyone thought that Machino would kick for France. That's probably something to do with it. So with 37 points, he's level with Halfpenny, who's 7-4, just behind him in the betting.
Yeah. Paddy, when it comes to the Lions, is the captaincy important for that kind of thing? You know, when you're a fellow player, do you care who's captain?
No, I think it is, because you have a number of different nations coming together. You know, cliques develop, and it takes strong leadership, and that's why Paul O'Connell was you know, so respected as a captain, because he brought that leadership. He binded the squad together, and you need that in an Lions team, you know, with the likes of the English and stuff. They need to buy into what is the Lions jersey, not just their own nations. And, you know, it's very important to have a strong captain at the front of that. And Ireland have a tradition of having great Lions captains in the past, from Willie John through to Brian to Paul. So, you know, for my old man, Rory Bess, hopefully he can make the trip. And he's a great leader as well. So, you know, even if he doesn't get the captaincy, if he makes a squad and doesn't get the captaincy, at least he's, you know, on the floor there to add his leadership, even though not as a captain, maybe.
Well, I for one now, I would enjoy seeing Owen Farrell as captain, because that would mean Johnny Sexton will be there right beside him getting barked at. And I think that could be hilarious. I suppose to finish off, Hayley, we've got two big weekends to go in the Six Nations. How are Ireland looking?
Ireland, actually, we didn't think there was much between Ireland and Wales, and we've started off that spread just Ireland minus a point, but they've been backed into -3, and the way that it's going, Wales have been completely friendless in the betting, and they'll probably, they could end up being somewhere like +5. And then we're 5-2 second favourites for the tournament. England are 9-4 on. We'll see. Another market that's been quite busy, actually, has been Italy and France. And France are currently -19, but Italy, even with their shock tactics, still lost by 21 points. So that spread could get wider as well.
So if this weekend goes to plan, and by that I mean that England and Ireland are playing each other, and England are going for a Grand Slam in a couple of weeks' time. Mm-hmm. Paddy, you've been there before, with England coming to Dublin, mm-hmm. looking for a Grand Slam.
Yeah.
What was that like preparing for it?
A headache, because so many people are ringing you asking for tickets that just don't exist. You know, the touts market for tickets will go through the roof if it does go to plan, and England are playing for a Grand Slam. We have, you know, everybody looking to come over and watch the game and get a seat at the Aviva. So, you mean, you just sort of bunker in, almost switch your phone off, and try to just focus on the job at hand. And It's easier whenever you're out at Carton House preparing or wherever the team may be, but it's whenever you get into the Shelburne and you're in around town and you're walking for a coffee and stuff, it's just, it takes over everybody's lives. And it's a great atmosphere to be part of, and in the past we've always sort of stepped up and been able to produce a performance off the back of that, and hopefully that'll be the same if it all goes to plan, and it'll be great theatre if that is the case. And you know, the town will be buzzing, and with the Legends game the day before and stuff, it'll be a great St. Paddy's weekend.
Okay, let's look forward to it, hopefully. Time to wrap it up. I'd like to thank Victor Costello and Jerry Flannery for dialing in. Thank you, Paddy Wallace.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Hayley O'Connor.
Thank you.
And thank you, Pat McCarry.
Cheers.
Joe Harrington is our producer and Shane Dempsey is on sound. Get in touch by tweeting any of us or at sportsshow.ie and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud or through your favourite podcast app. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thanks again for listening and we'll see you next week.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.